me love Superman, all the rest like Krugers. Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. Woo! We made it! So the Friday show, Kim Horcher, John Iderola, Grace Baldridge. All right, we have a lot to talk about. We have a drug heavy second hour, but we're also going to be talking a little bit about video games.
Two-thirds of the panel out of their mind on drugs.
Yeah, because it was just high out of my mind. But also, we're going to be talking about video games. I couldn't be joined by two better people to do that with, so that's going to be good. And we're also going to be talking about manspreading. And which I'm doing right now under the table. Sorry, Kim. And then we're also going to be talking about why sleeping in on the weekends could kill you, and if it's fake news or not. But that said, John, let's hear some TYT lives before we jump in.
Can I ask before I read these guys' questions? Have you brought us in from a break before?
No.
That was really good.
It was?
Yeah.
Was that not really good?
I did it.
Fucking confidence. I'm not supposed to swear.
I did it
she
once, and they never let me do it again.
Oh, that was
so
really good.
Job.
I'm gonna take notes off of that.
Woo!
But with that said, a couple tweets, just a few. There are four lights. Tweets or sends in on Twitter, which I'm sure you appreciate. There are four lights. I mean, still think Ted Cruz would have been a more dangerous president, to be honest. That is certainly possible. That is a definite possibility. I think that there would be less blatant self-promotion and self-profiting by Ted Cruz's family than Donald Trump, but the policies would be at least as dangerous, I think. So that's possible. And Jacqueline Mary says, much of what Cruz is saying is too weird for an episode of Veep on HBO. I've only watched a few episodes, so I can't attest to that.
You should get into it.
I think I would like it.
I really like her. I think she's really funny.
Yeah, truth is stranger than fiction, though. I will say that. All right, so let's jump in. We have sort of a twofold story on the opioid epidemic in America. So here we go. The US Food and Drug Administration has said on Thursday that the drug maker Endo Pharmaceuticals must remove a powerful opioid painkiller called Opana ER from the market. And the agency is saying that this is the first time they are calling for an opioid to be taken off the market due to, quote, the public health consequences of abuse. So a little bit more of what the FDA is saying, quote, we are facing an opioid epidemic, a public health crisis, and we must take all necessary steps to reduce the scope of opioid misuse and abuse. We will continue to take regulatory steps when we see situations where an opioid product's risks outweigh its benefits, not only for its intended patient population, but also in regard to its potential for misuse and abuse. So just to give you some background on Opana, this drug is about twice as powerful as OxyContin and other often abused opioids. The FDA approved it in 2006, and they have tried to make measures so that it's more difficult to abuse. They made a hard outer coating, so it's more difficult to crush. However, when the drug maker changed the formula in 2012, some addicts began injecting it instead. In the Indiana case, the shared needles helped spread the HIV infection to over 142 people. The United States, as you guys may know, is in the midst of an opioid overdose epidemic. According to the US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, opioid overdose killed more than 33,000 people in 2015, more than any year on record. Nearly half of all overdose deaths involve some sort of prescription drug. And we're going to get into that in the second half of the story with a new study coming out by the New York Times. But just to get your reaction on this half of the story, to their end, Endo Pharmaceuticals has released a statement in part saying, quote, despite the FDA's request to withdraw Opana ER from the market, this request does not indicate uncertainty with the product's safety or efficacy when taken as prescribed. Endo remains confident in the body of evidence established through clinical research demonstrating that Opana ER has a favorable risk-benefit profile when used as intended in appropriate patients. So the larger question here before we get into more details on the opioid epidemic in America is Endo to blame here? Are they doing enough? It's so difficult for doctors to make sure that patients are not abusing these prescriptions. What do you think about this coming out about this particular drug?
Well, no company is necessarily responsible for what people do when they don't use a product as intended. Theoretically, but some products are easier to use in unintended ways, and some products that are designed to be as strong as possible. It's not that's the problem. It's when you then combine that with lobbyists for these gigantic pharma companies that are pushing it to be prescribed to as many people as possible. you naturally increase the odds that some people are going to overdose on it or use it in inappropriate ways.
Yes, I was thinking, I was trying to cite this beforehand, but there was this study about most patients not being aware that their doctors were in some way incentivized to prescribe the things that they prescribed. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the pharmaceutical lobbies and the lack of transparency in that case I just mentioned, it's sort of insane when you compare this against the scope of the war on drugs and how harshly penalized people have been for things like marijuana, mm-hmm. which I would say are not responsible for not
33,000 deaths a year.
33,000 addiction related deaths.
Yeah.
It's just
it's probably lower.
It's interesting to just kind of follow where the money goes.
Yeah, I think it is interesting that sort of the default in the majority of states is on prescription pain medication rather than investing in maybe because I'm a marijuana user for my own like medical reasons as well. And it's interesting to see that I live in a state where that I can go to a doctor and have medical marijuana prescribed, whereas in another state for my medical issues, I might be prescribed, and in the past I have been prescribed, I was prescribed Oxycontin and Oxycodone at one point in time. That's insane.
That's too high.
And it did not help me. It was horrible. It was a bad time. Yeah. So it's just really, it's strange to see that there is obviously a correlation between people abusing these drugs and people who are being prescribed these drugs, and it's hard to find exactly what level of accountability we need to have, and yet there still aren't really any major proposed solutions aside from, well, just pull this one off the market. But a lot of people in this, and we're getting our information from CNN, were saying, you know, more needs to be done. It's great that Opana is now being taken off the market, but this is just one of many. I mean, fentanyl is another one that's being abused. It goes on and on, and I think that will sort of set segue us over into an article from Vox.com, and they are taking their information from a new report from the New York Times. And basically, the tagline on this story and why it's making a lot of headlines is, in 1 year, drug overdoses killed more Americans than the entire Vietnam War did. So they are sort of breaking this down and also providing a little bit of an explanation that I want to dive into with you guys as well. The Times contacted local and state agencies across the U.S. to come up with a rough estimate of people who have died from drug overdoses, and it calculated that 59,000 to 65,000 people died of overdoses last year, and that is more than the 58,000 U.S. soldiers who died in the Vietnam War. So a little bit more on the background and the opioid epidemic explained. Back in the 1990s, doctors were persuaded to treat pain as a serious medical issue. There's a good reason for that. About 100 million US adults suffer from chronic pain, according to a 2011 report from the Institute of Medicine. Pharmaceutical companies took advantage of this concern through a big marketing campaign. They got doctors to prescribe products like Oxycontin and Percocet in droves, even though the evidence for opioids treating long-term chronic pain is very weak, despite their effectiveness in short-term acute pain, while the evidence that opioids cause harm in the long term is very strong. So,
We're seeing it.
Right. So that really speaks exactly to what you were saying, Kim. And I think it's something that we don't talk about enough. And I think that most people are just unaware of that there is an incentive oftentimes for people to be prescribed the pain medication that they're being prescribed. And I think there should be more transparency. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would like to know if my doctor was compensated to prescribe me a specific prescription drug.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird if, like, theoretically, if you're on Instagram and you've gotten $1,000 for sunglasses or fit tea, that you have to be transparent about that.
That makes you poop.
Exactly. So we talk about the relative culpability of these different groups and stuff, and it's easy to say, is a drug being misused or used in an irresponsible way? But that doesn't just mean one thing. It doesn't just mean that a person's crushing it and injecting it. Person can misuse it, but a doctor can misuse it. A company can misuse it. Mm-hmm. And when you look at this chart and you see, you know, I don't know if you can see it here, you see the deaths shooting up.
No.
Starting in 99, what, did people not have pain back in 1999? No, I think we had roughly the same amount of pain. We just didn't have the same number of deaths because we treated pain differently, which means that something like 40,000 deaths last year alone could have been avoided. And when you look at the size under that graph, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of deaths that did not need to happen. Mm-hmm. In 1 year, you're looking at almost twice as many people as die in car accidents. And think about it, everybody basically drives. We drive a lot every day. Far fewer people do drugs, prescription or otherwise. I mean, that is a crazy increased risk there, and an unnecessary one, as is clear from the 1999 example.
Right. Yeah, and from my own personal experience, I remember when I was being prescribed, it was like maybe Percocet too. It was following a knee surgery, but what ended up happening was that I was given a huge prescription that because of other factors in my life. I would all say that I was addicted at all, but I definitely had a sort of dependency that messed with my brain a lot. Mm-hmm. And I understand that I was given this amount of Percocet that I didn't need. I had knee surgery. I needed it for about a week to get over it, and I had enough pills for a much longer time than that, that's the sort of accountability and transparency that I think we need from doctors to be like, okay, this is what she's going through. Pain medication is okay in doses, but it just seems like there wasn't any oversight. Whereas like, oh, she's having knee surgery, I trust her, she'll be fine, she's an athlete, she'll be okay. And you can't put that on a patient because you have no idea what they might be predisposed for. So a little bit more on what we can do as far as a solution. Well, Vox is saying, quote, the likely solution is to get opioid users into treatment. According to a 2016 report by the Surgeon General, just 10% of Americans with a drug use disorder obtain specialty treatment. The report found that the low rate was largely explained by a shortage of treatment options. Does that jive with what you guys know about drug addiction? Do you feel like there's a shortage of treatment options?
Well, I think that it certainly seems like the money is in getting people to buy more drugs than they actually need.
Well, then why isn't the money in the treatment? That, to me, that could be a very lucrative business. I've seen intervention. Those places are decked out.
That seems like that's true for people who can afford really fancy. I think that the government needs to get more involved in terms of funding that. There was actually quite a bit of discussion on both the Republican and Democratic side from some politicians before the election about how to deal with this. And people like, not just the Democratic candidates, but John Kasich, for instance, made a big deal out of this issue. But then Donald Trump got elected and he doesn't seem to care at all about it. Certainly doesn't talk about it much. And so the impetus to actually fix it at the federal level seems to have largely gone away.
And that blows my mind how we're not looking to fix this at a federal level.
But yeah, especially when you have to imagine that a lot of the people that make up those 59,000 deaths are not hippie libs from the coasts.
No.
It's Republicans. It's Republicans who live in Tennessee and Kentucky and everywhere across the country. It affects all classes of people. It affects all races of people and all partisan identifications. It should be the problem that's easiest to solve for the US, but it seems to be one that we're willing to keep kicking the can down the road and letting tens of thousands of people unnecessarily die every year.
Yeah, and to that exact point, my dad is a chaplain on the Ohio River region, and I was talking to him just yesterday. And he's been talking to me about the two reasons why he does funerals or why he's really called to serve are because of officers committing suicide or people who have served committing suicide. That's not something you talk about. And the second is drug overdoses because of the time that they're on these ships, we're serving in the Coast Guard or on the towboats. And that's just something that it's not treated. And he was saying literally just yesterday, before I knew we were covering this story, he's like, you look around at the funeral at this family for someone who's died for a drug that they were prescribed.
Yeah.
It's insane. But we gotta move on to the next story, also about drugs, well, fake drugs. I think
there's a few recurring themes.
There are a few recurring themes. So, a man was arrested at Bonnaroo, the music arts festival in Manchester, Tennessee, for thousands of fake drugs. He says he was doing the Lord's work. What exactly are we talking about here? According to an arrest warrant from the Coffee County Sheriff's Office, David E. Brady told officers he was doing God's work when they found 1,000 fake hits of acid, 20 bags made it look like cocaine, 37 pills that were made to look like Molly, 22 bags of fake mushrooms, and an incense stick made to look like black tar heroin. They said that they approached him and he made some sort of thinly veiled attempt to throw away the fake narcotics, but they knew what was going on. They're like, it wasn't me. Officer said they searched Brady and found the fake drugs. He told them he was doing God's work by selling fake drugs. Deputies discovered Brady was wanted in Arkansas on a felony bench warrant. Arkansas subsequently said it would extradite Brady, and he is now being held. His bail is set at $120,000, and his day in court, where we might get a little bit more on what he means by God's work, is set for August 11th. But in the meanwhile, I want to get y'all's interpretation.
Wait, was he arrested for the bench warrant or the fake drug deal?
So he is being charged as a fugitive from justice and two charges of possession of counterfeit controlled substances, which I did not know was a thing you could be charged for.
I didn't know that was a thing either.
I thought they were just like,
they're not controlled.
Yeah, exactly. Counterfeit controlled substances. Well, we learn something new every day.
I guess selling like fake guns illegally is also probably not.
No, wait, that happened on Orange Is the New Black once.
Is it really?
Flocka got arrested for selling like fake, I don't remember, ecstasy, something.
Yeah.
It's definitely a weird crime. And without being able to interview him, you wonder, I mean, is this a guy who thinks, well, if I sell them the fake drugs, then they will take them, but they won't be getting high. Gotcha, that's judo.
They're now not, you're not actually.
And then they'll come find him and beat the shit out
probably,
of him
yeah.
for selling
well,
the
no,
fake
like
drugs.
No, he's like a snake oil salesman. Like you sell your stuff and then you get out of there.
Well, this is, yeah, this isn't a plan. I agree with you, Kim, that I think he thought through. Because I would like to interpret what he says when he says doing God's work as, okay, I don't want people to be doing drugs. I don't agree with drugs. So I will give them, you know, fake drugs. Mm-hmm. And that is my way of sort of showing them Christ's love mm-hmm. because I'm not, they're not putting this bad stuff in their body. However, I don't know if he's done drugs before, because when you have done mushrooms, you also, you know, when you just eat a regular mushroom, that you're not tripping. Like, he's not, no one's not going to suddenly think that they're
this
tripping.
This is porcini.
yeah, exactly. So I don't think he really thought this through, but I also, it could be dangerous on the, on another side of things if the fake cocaine was,
what
I
is
don't,
it?
Right, if it was, someone said, I think in our production meeting, like laundry detergent or
that
like,
sounds
no.
bad.
Right, that could be
yeah.
really awful
yeah.
for someone. So either he's doing the Lord's work and he's killing them with fake drugs that are still dangerous, or they're just fake drugs and he's like giving, you know, 20-year-olds that don't know any better oregano and being like, this is weed.
So the question is he doing the Old Testament God's work or the New Testament God's work?
And
or a simpler explanation is, after all, he's not described as being arrested for giving away fake drugs. He was arrested for selling fake drugs. The cool thing about that is that doesn't matter if they get high off it, you still mm-hmm. get your 20 to 50, I don't know how much drugs are. I really don't buy a lot of drugs.
Yeah, that is
but
an
you
interesting
get the money,
distinction.
And he had a whole bunch of it. That sounds like a whole lot of money.
Yeah, I was gonna say that is an interesting distinction. He wasn't just being a good Samaritan. Let's keep going with the biblical references. Why not? And just giving away oregano. I'm saying that because that happened in my high school. A kid was caught selling oregano. What an idiot. And but he was actually selling them, so I think that, you know, that goes along with what his charges are. But
yeah.
Sucks to be him.
Yes. Like Job, this will be a challenge. We did it, everyone.
All right, so do we want to go to a quick break? Or do
yeah,
we
why don't
do
we do that?
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm really excited to get y'all's take on this. We are going to be telling you all about RuneScape's LGBT Pride event.
Mm.
We'll see you in a bit.
Oh, hi everyone.
Hey guys, welcome back. Welcome back to TYT, the second hour. It's me, Grace Baldridge, joined again by John Iderola and Kim Horcher. We have some awesome stories for the second half of the hour. We're going to be telling you about RuneScape's LGBT Pride event. We're going to be also talking to you about trans panic and gay panic defenses, which is less awesome, but still pride related. And then we're going to be talking about Thailand and how getting too much sleep on the weekend can give you heart disease. It's going to be jam packed.
Especially in
Thailand. Especially in Thailand.
It's rough.
But that said, John, you want to read some TYT Lives?
Yes, we have a couple of tweets about our first block, which was very drug related. Control Left tweeted this: Big Pharma, the most vicious drug cartel with the highest body count.
Oof.
That seems pretty clear. And Reverend Evolution says the real problem with opioids just might be that people are so desperate to escape reality that they are willing to risk death, which is true, but there are a lot of ways to escape reality that don't necessarily have to have so much risk.
Well, and one of the ways that people escape reality is through video gaming.
Yeah, nailed it.
What a segue. What a segue. So there's a video game that has been making the news of late because of their LGBT Pride event. The video game is called RuneScape. And while I am not very familiar with it, John and Kim are, the popular online fantasy game has been running since 2001 and holds the world record for the most updated game in the world, having been serviced with regular updates for more than 15 years. It is run by UK-based production company JagX. And one of the game's developers, ModWolf, actually teased that they were going to be holding this event on Twitter. He said, it's an honor to announce a small holiday event of mine will be coming to at Old School IRS. Oh. Old School RS this Thursday to celebrate Pride 2017. And this is actually not really new to RuneScape because they have featured a number of other events in recent years dedicated to important themes, including mental health animal protection and preventing online abuse with very little issue. Mm-hmm. However, when they rolled out this teaser of doing the LGBT Pride event, the Reddit posts were, there's some backlash. There are some negative ones, there are some positive ones. Let's talk a little bit about the negative ones. Some people on Twitter were saying things like, I play this game to play this game, not to agree or debate with other people's sexuality. A giant rainbow gay pride holiday event being shoved down my throat is not acceptable. Some players even attempted to start an in-game anti-gay pride riot. A riot is a long observed tradition by which players protest disliked updates. Hundreds of people assembled inside the game, repeatedly posting the slogan, we pay no gay. That said, there, look.
You could do better, come
you,
on.
You could think of a better catchphrase.
And
actually, I would say
protesting.
Gay people are really the best at catchphrases, like Yas Queen. If they just consulted, they could have gotten that a little tighter. Yeah. But there was some negative stuff. There were a lot of gamers who felt very positively about this rollout. One user said, gay pride is not political. It's just a celebration of basic human rights and being allowed to love whomever you want. I really don't see too much difference being anti-gay pride and anti-gay. And for their part, Jagex said, pride is about bringing communities together and celebrating love and understanding sentiment that's close to RuneScape's heart. There's no political statement here. Our only aim is to acknowledge and honor an event that promotes empathy, acceptance, and love. We are disappointed to see some hateful and abusive comments targeting individual members of staff and players from a small subsection of the community. We stand side by side with those targeted in support of them and in support of this cause. There is absolutely no place for hateful behavior in our community, and we will not tolerate abuse or harassment. Pride 2017 is something we wholeheartedly agree with and are proud to support. We know the community. Stand with us in support of the cause. If you want to show your support, all you have to do is take part in the event when it launches. I wanted to read that full statement because I think that even though I'm not a gamer myself, I think that gamers can get sort of an unfair shake of things when it comes to progress and social issues. I think that it's important to highlight that it's not the entire gaming world at all by any means that are bigoted in the sense, you know, homophobic or, you know, anti-feminist, anti-LGBT. I think it's important to showcase how awesome it is, you know, what they're doing. Now, the rollout itself does not explicitly mention LGBT people. And Kim, I want to toss it over to you. I can't think of anyone that would know about gaming more.
Okay.
What exactly was this, the RuneScape thing? So they have to gather.
Oh, how the mission went?
Yeah.
You have to gather.
Mission?
Okay, you meet one guy. And he says,
at a bar.
It goes well. No. Yeah. And he says, hey, can you help me with this quest? It's essentially you're going to find things across the world for him. And it turns out to be different parts of a rainbow. And at the end, you bring it to him. And he says something really offensive to sensibilities, including, what you've made me realize is that people like yourself who are willing to support those who wish to show their colors proudly, you're the reason I feel confident showing my colors. I want you to have this. You deserve it. And he gives you a scarf.
A rainbow scarf.
It's lovely.
And then you, outside of the game, become gay.
Yeah.
And then you are forced to engage in gay sex.
Yeah, they added a whole new module.
It's almost nothing.
It's like gay sex.
One rainbow. And then this quest, yeah, it's almost nothing.
How dare
it's
they?
Tiny.
I was, once I realized and read about what the mission was, mm-hmm. I was so surprised. I mean, it's so sort of vague that if I wasn't really thinking about how it's Pride Month and what I'm doing for Pride this weekend, mm-hmm. I probably would have just been like, oh, look at this flag that.
Yeah, people do rainbow. Quests all
I don't know.
The time.
I mean, the rainbow flag is definitely a symbol of the queer community, but it, you know, it also is just so normalized, and it looks pretty, and people like rainbows, even if they don't like gay people.
I mean, it's just so crazily the whatever backlash, and I will admit some of the media coverage of it did seem to mischaracterize the community a lot. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you know, we need to make it clear this is some people. I don't think, you know, the people who overgrown baby men represent the large group of people who play games, who ardently love games and support them, communities like RuneScape, Old School or RuneScape 3. And I think the backlash definitely outweighed what was in here. And then I think in retrospect, it's clear that, you know, maybe this isn't something we should have been deciding it was political, because all it was, I mean, if you look at the text from Gilbert, it's just like, hey, it's nice that we all get to be ourselves.
Yeah.
It's so cool not to get beat up for who we are.
It kind of makes me wonder if they hadn't sort of hinted that it was for LGBT pride, which I think they absolutely should be transparent about that. If you support pride, if you are an ally, I think it's so important to be outspoken, because we, you know, if you are silent, then you sort of side with our oppressors. That's my perspective on it. So I think it's important that they were open about it. That said, if I didn't know that this was a pride game, it might have only occurred to me after the fact, if this mission was pride related. My question for you guys, since you both are gamers, do you think that them rolling this out is good for the gaming community, or because they're covering the backlash, it's bad for the gaming community? Is there easy to come down on one side of this story?
I mean, the media is always going to mischaracterize this sort of thing. The people who are against something are always going to get more attention. One of the reasons that I think people fight against changes like this is because that small group of gamers, just like the small group of people in the community at large, would have protested any scarf that didn't have a Pepe the Frog on it. Like, there's some people that, like, that's all they can see is their own prejudices. Mm-hmm. But they see that things are changing, that the old school games like RuneScape are making events like this. New games like Overwatch, my main Roadhog is in a gay relationship with Judd.
He is? That's canon?
I don't know if it's canon, but everybody knows that.
I mean, if you
Junkrat
look at everyone's like fanships, it's always like Hanzo and McCree.
That
and
I don't think
Mercy
is real. But there are gay characters,
Farrah.
And there's nothing wrong with
that. No, that's just people like it.
Yes, exactly.
It's just popular.
And they're always going to have a problem. But games are getting more inclusive and more representative, more diverse in the sorts of people that they're focusing their experiences on. And that is a good thing. The only issue I would take with some of these articles that I think are a little bit dishonest is, I'm pretty sure that EverQuest has been updated for longer than RuneScape. And that's not fair that you give the credit to RuneScape.
I think RuneScape does hold the record though, right?
2001? I was playing EverQuest before 2001, I feel like.
But it's like for the most updates, not for how long the games are running.
That may be true. But yeah, no, the event is perfectly fine. A small group has a problem with it. And unfortunately, it is all too easy for the media to be like, gamers have a problem, when humans have a problem. And some humans are gamers.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to more gay stuff.
Yes.
This is a second hour with Grace. It's gonna be gay. Whoa, all right. We okay over there?
What did
no big deal.
Okay, so, I hate this story, but I love that we're gonna be talking about it. So, being freaked out by a gay or a trans person is still a legal murder defense in about 48 states. So maybe you've heard about this before, but there is actually a legal defense strategy. In short term, it's known as trans panic defense or gay panic defense. What you're asking for when you submit that defense is seeking to pin blame for violence and assault on one's sexual orientation or gender identity. Though not often successful, they are troubling for the fact that in most states, they are allowable at all. Now, in 2013, the American Bar Association did release a resolution calling for federal, state, and local governments to pass legislation curtailing their use, but as of yet, only California and Illinois have introduced laws that would ban this defense. So Vice.com is saying it's worrying that a vast majority of states have yet to ban a legal defense that uses one's gender or sexual identity to justify violence. More worryingly, a handful of states besides California and Illinois that have recently tried to ban these defenses have failed. And though legislation is in progress in others, bills that haven't passed are a case study in the bureaucratic red tape that can bog down what should be all but an open and shut effort. And they go into detail on a couple states that are working to introduce efforts, including New Jersey and Pennsylvania, but they're just not quite getting there. They're not quite passing these bills. The American Bar Association, for their part, has said, quote, the defense has no medical or psychological basis, and they're used to make a case for either insanity or diminished capacity as inappropriate, since homosexual panic disorder, holy shit, what was once thought to be psychiatrists to be a panic brought on by perversion is no longer recognized by the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Every once in a while, I have sort of a flashback to an older time that I fortunately was not alive for, of when that could be a homosexual panic disorder. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for being born in the 90s. So recent cases have shown that the defense can be used effectively sometimes to help mitigate sentencing, such as that of the murder of Larry King, an openly gay 15-year-old in Oxnard, California student who was shot by classmate Brandon McInerney in 2008. And his defense did actually invoke a gay panic defense, claiming that King's sexual jeers were to blame for the shooting. I don't really know how you slice this up where it isn't victim blaming.
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, he was, by the way, doing the sexual jeers in response to, you know, shouting, "I'm gonna kill you, I hate you," like hateful things mm-hmm. shouted at him. It was like deflecting, you know, harmless deflecting. And it's like, oh no, that's why we did this, you know? And it's just, it's insane to think that you deserve to be killed because of something that you are, because of the way you are. You know, that's
that
a proper
the way
defense.
You are can is provoking someone to act violently.
Because that seems like it's a legal way of saying, like, oh, there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly.
Well, because they're trying to imply that you are gay, and thus you, like a grizzly bear, are so inherently mm-hmm. dangerous that you might need to be killed because of it. Mm-hmm. What's funny is, and it's not total crossover, but there are people, generally conservatives in this country, who, like, for instance, might be Christians and feel like Christians are the victims and we're being hunted down and they're trying to take away Christmas. And we are like this tiny little attacked minority, even though we're still the vast majority of the entire country and hold all the positions of power in government. And the same thing, the idea that gay people are predators hunting down the weak, isolated straight people is stupid and it's ridiculous. And all these sorts of laws are. It's the same as laws that previously, and thankfully most of them are gone, allow you to rape your wife or punch your wife or stops her from divorcing you or all that stuff. It's incredibly conservative people passed laws in the past. And a lot of them, especially in conservative areas, have lingered to today.
Well, and what it sounds like also from Vice's reporting is that this is a lazy defense. They were saying they consulted with a former California State Assembly member, Susan Bonilla, and she basically said that the majority of people who didn't want for the bill in California to pass, which fortunately it has, were former public defenders. And they had raised concerns that by banning panic defenses in general, defendants would be denied a complete and fully rigorous defense. Which sound, I mean, how, that's just lazy.
That's like trying to, you know, just kind of skirt the rules or maybe outdated laws that don't account for modern times or common sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what else really to say about this story.
No, it needs to change. It needs to catch up to the rest of the country.
Yeah, it needs to change. And I just couldn't believe that in 48 states, I know that I live in a very safe bubble, but there are moments like this, and I've talked about this with my girlfriend, and we live in West Hollywood, which is like one of the gayest parts of the world. Yeah, and you know, some people have said, "Oh, she's so sheltered because she lives in this bubble." I why would I want to leave my bubble? My parents live in Kentucky, and I don't visit. I love them, but I didn't grow up in Kentucky. I have no ties to Kentucky. I don't visit them very often. They come to me because Kentucky is not a cool. Like, I will get yelled at for being so visibly gay, which I love, but they don't, and so it's. I don't know. It's just gross that there. I my heart breaks for my community when I hear about things like this.
Yeah.
With that said, let's go. Let's move on to a guy.
Well, why don't we take our last break of the show?
Yeah, we want to take a break. Let's go to a break and when.
Right? No.
No, we're not going to take
break.
A break.
Oh, okay. We don't take two breaks.
Canceled.
What's cool about what just happened is that my earpiece is working.
Sorry. You're so natural with it. I didn't even know you had one in.
I do. Okay, so we're going to talk about Facebook now. A little change of pace. A man has been jailed for 35 years in Thailand for insulting the monarchy on Facebook. So a Bangkok military court convicted him of 10 counts of lèse majesté for posting photos and videos of the royal family on a Facebook account that purported to belong to a different user. His name is Wachai, he's 34 years old, and we're only going to be releasing his first name because they want to protect his relatives from ostracism because lèse majesté is a very serious law in Thailand. The court punished him with 7 years per count. Altogether, he was given 70 years, but it was reduced in half because he confessed. This is coming from iLaw. Lèse majesté cases are routinely shrouded in secrecy with the media forced to heavily self-censor the details to avoid violating the broadly interpreted law. According to iLaw, which I initially denied the charges, but later confessed after waiting for more than a year in jail for the court proceedings to begin. I would confess too. Les Majestés suspects are rarely acquitted or granted bail. The United Nations rights body was warned that Thailand's widespread use of the law may constitute crimes against humanity. And also to put this into perspective before we talk about this broad law is that before 2006, there were about 5 to 7 Les Majestés cases per year. And now that has gone way up. So I want to get a reaction from you. I watch a coverage on Al Jazeera of Les Majestés in Thailand, and it seems like a whole bunch of different news organizations are trying to define exactly what constitutes the sort of grounds that you would get locked up for. Is it making a joke on Facebook, or is it making a joke in person?
I think it's anything.
It's anything. Mm. It's so vague. It's so
amorphous.
It's just
whatever they find insulting, I suppose, is enough.
Yeah, I think it's one of the reasons that when you describe it as crimes against humanity, it is creating a state where people can never feel secure in what they say. That like you offend the king, what the hell does that even mean? You can be offended by anything, you can be offended by reality. And if you can lock someone up for the rest of their natural life because they posted some memes or something like that, you now basically can manufacture life sentences whenever you want. I mean, how easy would it be to fake this sort of thing?
Right.
And also, how inherently weak must you be? Like, whichever king it is, and I guess I can't go to Thailand ever again, how weak must you be that you can't take criticism? Obviously, no politician likes it, most accept it, but you can't even take jokes anymore.
Yeah,
and it's a very different society, and I totally get that. You know, when the previous king died, the whole country shut down for a long time. It is different, and you get to have your different society, but people cannot be locked up for making jokes.
Well, also, this comes on the heels of a criminal court sentence another Les Majestés suspect for 2.5 years in jail for uploading an audio clip from an underground political radio show that was deemed insulting to the monarchy. So that sounds a lot like silencing the opposition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and
it's not a democracy, though.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think, and that's what you point out, John, that is, I think, very important to remember, because I remember when Brett went there as well. It's a very different society. That said, we are allowed to critique it. Mm-hmm. You know, we are allowed to critique it from the
outside.
We're
just not allowed to critique it and then go there.
We definitely.
Probably.
We just can't go there.
I can't go 35 years any jail, let alone a Thai jail. I won't make it.
I can't bite my tongue enough. I can never
go. Was this regarding the video where the king's wearing a crop top?
So
interesting, I don't know.
I think it's very possible because I know that story also went viral. I don't know if you guys covered it on this show.
I think we did.
Yeah, I know we covered it on Pop Trigger, so you guys probably did as well. I think that might have something to do with it, but because it's so secretive, reporters were barred from entering the military court where the verdict was read. So we don't actually know that many details about the specifics of why he was convicted, but it's not an easy, it's not a far off jump to make, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, you want to move on to manspreading, guys?
Let's
always
do it. Spread it out.
I've already been there. As I said, I've been manspreading this entire time.
she stopped now.
I stopped. So, Madrid is tackling manspreading on public transportation with some new sign rollout. So, the Spanish capital's municipal transport company EMT is to put up signs discouraging the practice. Now, let's take a look at one of those signs. There we go. It's pretty self-explanatory. Ixnay on the spreading.
Don't do that.
Now, for those of you who are a little unfamiliar with the term, manspreading is an English term that describes the posture of men who open their legs too wide and take up neighboring seats. That is according to the EMT. All public transport has stickers explaining that room needs to be made for pregnant women, people with buggies, older people, and those with disabilities. But there's something that affects all of us practically every time we use public transportation, manspreading. That comes from the petition that led to the EMT to put forward this initiative. So I have a little bit of a controversial opinion on manspreading, but I want to get y'all's reaction first.
I think it's crazy that you could pay for one ticket and decide your pride/knee deserves two. Mm-hmm. It's just really discourteous.
Okay.
You shouldn't do anything to make it so that other people can't sit down, or theoretically if they're sitting there that makes them really uncomfortable. As a general rule, I think that focusing specifically on manspreading, I get that it took off. That's the sort of culture we live in. It just seems odd. There's all sorts of ways that you can take up additional space. You can have gigantic bags.
People do that all the time.
You could lean over. I know. So have a general rule where you don't take up other space. But specifically manspreading, it doesn't seem necessary to me.
I completely agree with you, John. I think that the problem with manspreading is inherently in the name that we have given it, manspreading. I manspread. I'm not proud of myself for it, but I know that I do it.
I'm so proud of myself.
What's up? But I know that I manspread. But there's got to be another word for it because it is not just men that spread.
Take up so much damn room.
Yes. Not take up so much damn room. Because you know, look,
expansionism.
What I also don't like is that it means that
men manifest destiny.
No, it's got man in it.
What it means is that like women have their like, or that men have their legs out, and that women are always like little dainty creatures who just cross their legs. And I'm just happy to be on the train. You know, I only recently won my rights. Like that's not women anymore. It just doesn't represent how, you know, we are. Some women I have seen carry purses. Good for you. Don't put it on the seat next to you. I think that in general,
I can take up a seat just as much as a leg.
I like Kim's rebranding effort. Don't take up so much damn room. Now, I think if we can go back to graphic number two, I think the image is spot on because that still shows, you know, don't be that guy, right?
His arm is also taking up space.
And it's just showing it's unnecessary.
Yeah, he's just showing it's unnecessary, but I think gendering it to uniquely men is offensive to me and my manspreading.
Yeah, and also, look, there are some people, like we as, especially in America, but increasingly around the world, we are gaining a lot of weight. And that can cause people to take up, through no fault of their own, a lot of space as well. Not just in general taking up more space, but specifically spreading. If you have a very big stomach, you're naturally going to spread. That's just how anatomy works.
Right.
And so theoretically, those people who have either a health issue or healthy and are just much larger, they're manspreading, I guess.
I think the difference is between you can help it or you can't help it. Because like
intentional
and putting your arms and legs out is a choice that I'm making in this moment.
I don't know. What if you were a cowboy? You got bow leg. I don't know. I feel like it's unnecessarily antagonistic.
You're a cowboy on the subway
in Madrid. Yeah. Interesting story. Great opening for a movie.
Yeah.
I just think that promoting mindfulness on public transportation is always a good thing. That being said, let's just be a little bit more intentional on a broader focus here,
rebrand
and not just
it.
Yeah, rebrand. Again, I like you, Kim.
Just put the word "damn" in there for no reason.
Yeah. Okay, so last story. Oh man, it's a bummer going into the weekend.
Is it though?
Is it? So I don't even know how to open this. Could sleeping in on the weekends actually be really bad for you? Well, according to one study that has yet to be peer-reviewed by a medical journal, they are saying it is possible. A preliminary new study found that every hour sleep was shifted per week was associated with an 11% increase risk of heart disease. These findings were presented this week at the annual meeting of the Associated Professional Sleep Societies, which is what I just call my bedroom, a joint venture between the American Academy of Sleep Medicine and the Sleep Research Society. Again, it hasn't been peer reviewed yet, and the authors are just basically using their findings to indicate what could be more set in stone at a later date, but let's talk about it. To study the effects of altered weekend sleep patterns, researchers looked at survey responses from approximately 1,000 adults ages 22 to 60 to determine participants' average amount of social jet lag. They subtracted weekday from weekend sleep midpoints. If a person reported sleeping from 11 p.m. to 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. on weeknights, midpoint 3 a.m. and from 1 a.m. to 9 a.m. on weekends, midpoint 5 a.m. for example, that's a 2-hour difference. The researchers found that every hour of social jet lag was independently associated with a 22% increased likelihood of self-reported good health as opposed to excellent health and a 28% increased likelihood of fair/poor health. Each hour of weekend sleep shifting was also associated with an 11% increased risk of heart disease, as well as higher scores of fatigue, sleepiness, and depression screening questionnaires. So first, let me get a reaction from you guys. Do you think that sleeping in is gonna kill you?
I have a hard time believing the study at all.
Okay.
Because like you mentioned, it is yet to be peer reviewed.
Right.
It said this is associated, where there's no clear consensus on whether it causes it or not. And sleep studies, along with food studies, are very hard to do because there's so many factors that go into this long length of time that you're studying. You don't know what this person's life is, or their stress level, or their anxiety, or their job, or their diet, or so many different factors that could change whatever risk for heart disease or other factors might be.
I think that that's an important thing to point out, is that with studies like this, it is so subjective to each individual person. I'm skeptical if they can make a broader assumption on
that's why you do a survey with 1,000 people, is to try to get rid of some of that natural variability between individuals.
But I'm so cynical when it comes to studies. Anytime a new scientific study says that you should, you know, punch yourself in the face and then you'll have more friends, like that is not a real study at all. But I'm
what kind of friends at the end of the day?
I would only buy this, I think, if they had surveyed maybe 10,000 adults. I really only believe the really broad ones.
I just think, also self-reported surveys are also another factor to look into. But it's just, I mean, there's something to be said about presenting science in a journalistic way, because so often this will be taken at face value and be read to be the truth. And it's just like, well, what about these other studies? What about peer reviewing it? It's a fair thing to say.
That said, a research assistant at the University of Arizona, where who was involved in the study, Sierra Forbush, said just simply, "This suggests that a regular sleep schedule may be an effective, relatively simple, and inexpensive preventative treatment for heart disease as well as many other health problems." That I can get on board
with.
I think
sleep well.
Is actually, you know, whenever you're feeling exhausted or you're coming down with something, you get a good night's sleep, it does help your health.
Yeah, Arianna Huffington can get behind that. I think that their basic idea in the article, not in the headline, the article, that if you're sleeping the same amount but you shift it all over the place over time, that could be bad for your health. That's not a stretch, I don't think. But it's the way that people are pitching it, as sleeping in on the weekends might be bad for you. But what they describe here is not the issue. It's not that people are just going to sleep later on Friday and Saturday nights and getting the same amount of sleep. I have a feeling a lot of those people are also sleeping more. And they're saying they're controlling for it to make sure that they're sleeping the same amount, but that's not reality. Reality is I might go to sleep at 1 instead of 11, but I'm probably also gonna sleep for 10 hours, which probably gets rid of a lot of the negative health effects. It may not be sustainable, it may not be great for you, but I'm not sure that what they're describing is really how the headlines of these articles are pitching it.
It also doesn't control for, you know, reasons why.
Or how this video title might pitch it. We'll see. I don't make the titles.
Yeah, it also.
We don't do that. Don't complain to us.
We have no control over that. It also doesn't control for things like maybe you getting real turnt on the weekends, and then that might affect your night's sleep, because I know this guy does.
Yeah.
I don't. I don't go out
ever. I
take
some fake mushrooms and I go wild.
I go wild. But guys, that's going to do it for the second hour. We hope that you all are gonna get a good night's sleep after watching this and have a wonderful Pride weekend. I've never signed off before, so I don't really know how to do it from here, but I appreciate everyone watching. You guys are great. Edwin's counting me down at any second now.
No, we're good. We have a little time.
Yeah, a little bit of time.
We're really fast. You can you can be found on Nerd Alert. And of course, Grace is on Pop Trigger.
I'm on Pop Trigger. Also, please vote for Murder with Friends at the Streamies. They extended the voting. Awesome. John.
Oh, I'm on Think Tank and also here a lot of the time. So I look forward to seeing you more.
And we will see you guys next time. Go, Kim.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.